Welcome to Who Are You? The Life Lessons of Sports, episode 36.
Welcome to Who Are You? The Life Lessons of Sports with your host, Rob Elwood. Join us as we open the door and take an unforgettable journey to unlock the full power of sports on and off the field. Listen to personal stories and reflections from incredible leaders who are sure to move and inspire you. So listen and enjoy another episode of Who Are You? The Life Lessons of Sports.
We timed everybody by hand. We didn't have timing systems. And so that had its share of challenges, because what we found, this was funny, was when you're timing by hand, you need the person to stop at the finish line so that you can see what their number is and make sure you get the correct time. Well, they were so pumped up and so full of adrenaline that they were literally knocking the timers over and pushing them out of the way and running 10, 15 feet past the finish line because they were just so supercharged. So we knew we had something. Like if that first early three and a half mile course did that to people to the point where they lost their own sense of control, we knew this was going to be exciting.
Who Are You Nation? Well, so if you don't know me, I got to let you in on a little secret. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and I spend a lot of time working, of course, on these interviews to make sure that they come across as well as they can, both from an audio perspective and organizationally as well, on the internet and the website. So when I called my friend here, our interview episode of the day, Joe DeSena from The Spartan Race and Spartan Up, his new book, and I was expecting a phone call from a quiet place, well, he gives me a call, and this call comes from what I believe is either one of two things. He is either, number one, actually doing a Spartan race, so he's in the middle of an obstacle course being interviewed by somebody who's holding a microphone near him, or number two, he is down sitting in the middle of Times Square where he hired people to come run by and distract him while he was doing this to see if he could get through the interview that way. Well, either way, it ended up being the latter without the people being paid to distract him. But at first, I'll be very honest, it was a little frustrating because it was not sort of that perfect interview, that perfect episode, that audio that Who Are You Nation deserves. But like sports, I took a deep breath for a second and said, well, this is something that I've preached before. These are uncontrollables. I can't control this. And so Joe can't control it. And that's basically the attitude moving forward. So I thought it was a really good life lesson, both for me, and I don't know how much Joe actually thought about it this way, but he totally rolled with it, not even phased for a second, which means he's completely accepted the uncontrollables. And yeah, I haven't played sports in a while, and I haven't been in a situation in a while where I was faced with a challenge, so it took me a second to click back in. But it's a good reminder for everybody to really focus in on the uncontrollables, because I had a couple options at that point, either stop the interview and say, hey, let's do it another time. And for a man who is this busy and launching a book and putting on events for millions of people, close to a million people, I should say, across the globe and growing, it's rare to get significant quality time with folks like Joe. So we just rolled with it, and we also had fun with it. And I just wanted to make that point once again, that when things aren't going your way or the expectations have been set in one direction, however they turn out into another, you have a couple options, everybody out there at Who Are You Nation. You either quit and go home, you either complain about it, or you accept it and you say, these aren't in my control, so what can I do to make things better that are in my control? And Joe and I were able to do just that. We had some fun with the interview. Yes, it gets loud at times. Sure, it's distracting, but we made some jokes along the way and really rolled with it. So it just goes right to not only what we've been preaching on Who Are You? Life Lessons of Sports, but also our guest. It's so fitting that our guest of Spartan Up, a man who used to run a race called the Death Race, changed it to Spartan Race, is, sounds like he's in the middle of a Spartan race while doing the interview. So actually, it all turned out perfectly when you look back on it, and that's tends to be the pattern in life when we accept what we have, do with what we have what we can, and move forward. So anyway, Joe DeSena, everybody, what a wonderful interview this is, and what an inspiration to get off the couch and go do work. So when you hear the word burpees, know that I am doing burpees, and there's going to be a section on our website that gives to the Joe's TED Talk on burpees, and I really encourage everybody to go check it out, because I've been doing burpees now ever since I talked to Joe. And, oh man, am I feeling strong, and it's not a joke. It is hard, tricky, get your heart rate up and everything else. Well, I digress, but very excited to introduce Joe DeSena. Here we go. Okay, Who Are You Nation? I am extremely honored to introduce our special guest today, Joe DeSena. Joe, are you ready to put your game face on and join our team?
Ready to do it. I'm down here in New York, and there's a lot of action going on, so I'm ready to roll.
Oh, I love it. What a great place to be for this interview. Well, Joe, I just gave a brief introduction about you, but please take a moment, introduce yourself, and let Who Are You Nation know what you're up to these days.
Yeah, so name's Joe DeSena. Founded and run a company called Spartan Race. It's more of a cult, would be a negative term. I would say it's a movement, global movement. We've got, hopefully, if we hit all our numbers, about 1 million people competing in our events this year. And then we've got this book, Spartan Up, coming out, which is really meant to help people get motivated, rip them off the couch. And even if they don't go to do a Spartan race, maybe they drink a little healthier drinks that day, or eat a little healthier, or maybe get up and walk around their house.
Love it.
So that's my 24/7 focus.
I can tell.
These days.
I can tell. Moving a mile a minute. And you mentioned you're in New York now. What brings you down there?
So the book that we're doing this has gotten us a lot of interviews, and I was down on ABC News this morning at 4 a.m. doing an interview, and so I had to drive down 5 hours and do that. So if I sound a little tired, I know the listeners are supposed to, or at least Spartan listeners, expect me to never get tired. I'm tired.
Well, it's okay to be very candid here. That's a long drive from Vermont. But hey, thanks for coming on the show. Already we're starting off on a positive note here. I want to learn more about the book and your journey. But to get us started, Joe, if you don't mind, to get your game face on, could you share a motivational or inspirational quote and how it's reflected upon you and your life so far?
Yeah, I love if you're going through hell, keep going, Winston Churchill. And that's basically been my lifelong motto. I grew up in a crazy place in Queens, New York, that was like organized crime capital of the world. Anybody who's seen Goodfellas would know it, and because that's the heart of it in that movie. And so, you know, people got killed, people went to jail. It wasn't that, you know, cars weren't blowing up on the streets, but it was a very gritty place where people did crazy things. And quickly learned at a young age to just have to deal with adversity. And so I've just had that policy. If we go through hell every day or once a week or sometime in our life, and if you can keep your head down and push through, it makes life a lot easier.
Yep.
So that's been my policy.
Sounds like it carried right over into your entrepreneurial ventures, and especially Spartan Race as well. Would you say that's one of the core values?
Yeah, that's it. It's I think the problem with the world today is we naturally, as human beings, want easier, faster, cheaper, better. Right? If there was a pill to make everything better, and there are pills that claim to do this, we would take it and we buy it. And I would argue that maybe we should make things a little harder on ourselves. Get a little grittier, and that actually makes our lives better. Now, that's a tough thing to sell. It's a lot easier to sell the pill than it is to sell what I'm selling.
Yep.
But by and large, the people that buy what I'm selling, which is this idea of making your life tougher, I think have a more rewarding life.
Great, great. Well, we just mentioned a moment ago, and to start our journey, if you don't mind going back a little bit, could you invite us into your childhood home and describe a little bit more about what it was like? So it's good we've checked off this fact that there's no cars blowing up on the streets. That's good. but if you could bring us back and just help us understand how sports, school, and your home helped integrate into your life and how you reflect back on it today.
Yeah, so I mean, we're all products of our environment. And now that I'm a parent, you really understand how important mom and dad are, if you're lucky enough to have two. And mine were very unique in their own way. My mom was a yogi, health freak, a vegan. Sorry about that. Buses are going by. But
we're doing this interview live from 42nd Avenue, right?
Live right from the sidewalk of New York.
I love
so,
it.
Mom was awesome, and that was unique in the 70s in Queens, New York, to be focused on health food and fitness and spirituality and meditation. And then Dad was just a serial entrepreneur. I mean, he was 24/7, like the stuff you read about, in a multitude of businesses. And so both of them, huge fires in their belly. I just woke up and wanted to get stuff done, and I got all this influence, thankfully, from my mother on how important it is to be healthy, and then from my dad on how to focus and really just be relentless in life and persistent and never let go until you got what you want. And it's paid in dividends. And it paid dividends.
I'll bet it has. Now, were you a sports nut growing up? Were you always on the streets playing ball or doing other
things?
Yeah.
So where I grew up, it's funny, we talk about it a lot now that I have children. It was football and baseball or wiffle ball all day, right? Until the lights went out in front of your house and mom started screaming, "Hey, get inside, Joseph." And today it's not like that. You don't see all the kids outside playing. People are a little more nervous, maybe because of the internet. Maybe information is more accessible and people are a little more frightened. But it wasn't too many generations ago. I mean, it was me and all my friends in those streets that just played all day, every day. And kids today, just you see them playing video games. We didn't do that.
Yep. Yeah, well, I remember those times as well, and miss them. And you're so right; it just really doesn't exist. Maybe somewhere out there, we'd love to hear from you. Who are you, Nation? But haven't seen it recently, at least in my neighborhoods. Everything's very organized these days. But hey, those are the times, and can't really do much about it. But I do recall those nostalgic moments of calling somebody up or just knowing they're going to be there. Right? Just go outside; you know they're going to be at the ballpark.
Yeah.
Sorry, or at the park or next to the ballpark, or you know they're going to be on the field, and it was game on.
No, it was all day, every day. So what we've done in our house now is we were lucky enough to find a Kung Fu instructor that lives right near our farm. And I've got him over the house at 5:45 every morning, waking the kids up and forcing them to do an hour of Kung Fu.
Wow.
Now, anybody out there listening that works for social services, don't come and get me. But if they're not going to play outside like we did all day, well, then I'm going to give them a couple of hours of fitness anyway, in a way that I can create.
I think it's great. Actually, I'm going to take advantage of that for a second. Why Kung Fu?
Kung Fu is a lot like gymnastics. So I think it's really important for a child at the age of, my children are all under 10, to get balance, flexibility, core strength, and Kung Fu provides all of that. And now they're getting into a little bit of Tai Chi, Wing Chun. Who knows? Maybe they'll be little CIA agents or something.
That's right. No, that I think that's excellent. Actually, I've heard from a lot of people, especially those who are experienced athletes and have gone off and done wonderful things and sort of climbed the ladder, that just getting that, either it's a spatial awareness and figuring out your body and sort of balance, like you said, is much more important at these ages than really team sports. I mean, we have plenty of time for team sports. There is something healthy about team sports, of course. You and I both know that. But really finding out more about your body and listening to it and understanding how it moves will help later on, I'm sure, in whatever sports endeavor, like you said, or CIA agent endeavor they take on. So
No, I can see it already. When we introduce them to a sport, you know, now they're 3 years into this Kung Fu every day, 7 days a week in the mornings. They just naturally pick it up, whether it's soccer, football, baseball, whatever it is. They've got that core foundation you just described.
That's really cool. Well, if I ever get invited to your house for the night, I will bring my tent and sleeping bag so I can sleep in past 5:45. I just took down that note there. Well, thanks for sharing that. Now, going back to your childhood, as you started to get older, did you have a job growing up? If so, do you remember what it was and how you reflect upon it today?
Yeah, so I was a pool guy. My neighbor growing up was the head of an organized crime family, and he only had daughters, and I was like, he took me under his wing. I didn't know who he was or what, you know, what level he was at or that he did that. And he asked me to clean his pool one day, and that led to cleaning 750 pools. I quickly had a lot of customers, and this was all before college and then during college. And it ended up paying for school. And so it was a very interesting first job because it gave me this look into 750 different families and how they lived their lives and what worked and what didn't across all kinds of cultures, whether it was a Jewish family, Italian family, Germans, Hispanic, you name it, they were my customers. And really insightful and really gave me a leg up, I think, on me having a family now and trying to avoid the mistakes I saw people make. And then enhancing the small successes.
Yeah, that's really neat, the fact that you pointed out. I'm expecting a story here about all the different pools you clean, but the fact that you got to see all these families is really actually something interesting. And is this you driving around in a van with pool equipment? How would you describe the process? How much did you charge? I'm just curious about this entrepreneurial venture.
Yeah, it was really funny. I didn't have any pool equipment. I borrowed my dad's van in the early days. And we, well, in the very early days, I couldn't drive. I was 13 years old when this started. But eventually, when I had a van, I borrowed my dad's van. I had taken my father's pool equipment out of his pool. So his pool turned green. I used it to clean my first few pools. I had 5 customers and 10 customers. We would charge $35 an hour. And then that eventually led to, hey, Joe, can you also replace the bricks in the backyard? Hey, Joe, can you replace my sliding glass door? And so before you know it, we had a construction business as well. And it was actually, by the time I graduated college, it was actually a fairly substantial business.
I'll bet.
That I was going to stick with.
Well, always taking advantage of opportunity and being prepared. Sounds like you were, especially in sports or in entrepreneurial ventures. What I really like about that story is that your father's pool turned green. You could take pictures of it and say, this is what's going to happen to your pool.
That's right. He didn't like it so much, but yeah, well, I had a business to run.
Exactly, and you could charge him triple now to go back and clean his.
That's right.
Well, listen, how did, if we're going to go now and moving on, talk to us a little bit about Spartan Race, right? Where did the concept begin for you? What were the first days? I mean, we just spoke a minute ago about close to 1 million people competing. Everything's got a narrative and a story. Can you walk us through, A, what is Spartan Race for those listeners out there who may not be too familiar with it? And B, what's the story and narrative to date of the business and of the race?
Yeah, so so basically we started it back in 2010. Prior to that, we had something called the Death Race that I created with a partner. And in 2010, you know, I had said I'm only going to invest $50,000. That is my total investment in this. I think it'll work, but I don't think it's going to be that big. And I don't have time to run it because I had other businesses at the time. And I couldn't convince anybody to run this thing, and I couldn't convince anybody to invest in it. Everyone thought it was ridiculous. Who would possibly crawl under barbed wire or jump over fire? And we now know the story. I mean, from that first race in 2010 with about 1,500 people, we'll have 131 events this year around the globe if we hit all our targets in 17 countries, and there'll be 1 million participants this year alone. So it's grown massively, and in a way, you got to be careful what you wish for, because the original inspiration to do this was to stay fit myself. I just like doing this stuff. It was really fun. I wanted to get people around me fit. And now I find myself doing podcasts and interviews and emails and phone calls all day, every day.
Yeah.
So you don't really get to enjoy the whole reason you might have started something.
Yeah.
But there's huge rewards in that. I receive emails on a daily basis saying, hey, Joe, you changed my life.
Yep.
So, know, thinking back to those early days of the pool business, and I was very friendly with lots of my customers in that case, and some of these Italian guys that were doing things that were not so legal, let's say. One of them, I recall saying to me, "Hey, the best thing you can do in this life is to help people." Mm-hmm. And so, looking back, if that's the way you value whether or not you're living your life the right way, it feels very good right now.
I'll bet. And I will say that. And first of all, be honest with us. Are you still in the pool cleaning business? Is that what you're doing right now?
Right now, I'm cleaning a pool. that pays the bills. I'll tell you what, when we bought our farm in Vermont, there was a pool there. And the first thing I did before I did anything else, before I even walked in the house, was I rented an excavator and I ripped it out of the ground because I said, I am not going to clean another pool. And funny enough, after we had children, I now installed a new pool. So
there you go. It's time to pass on the legacy.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoy and appreciate you taking us back to where it all started. Now, we had Kevin Donahue on the show a couple weeks ago for listeners who want to check out his episode. Fantastic, a podium winner. But what I really picked up from the interview with him was not so much about, I guess, the grit and the challenges, although those exist, right, in the competition, and those exist. So I don't want to undermine those. But really, the opportunity to be around so many like-minded and driven people, regardless of athletic ability. And he spoke many, many times just about how he would finish the race. And of course, if, like most races, you could just go sit down and rest. He would actually circle back, and it tends to be a common theme, he said, and help others, whether folks were injured in a car accident or coming back from overseas in the war, or just anybody who was struggling, but there in positive mind, spirit, and body to continue the race. So have you found that to be a truth as we continue this as globally?
Enormous camaraderie. It goes back, to the early history of Spartans. It's I don't know if it's because we named the company Spartan Race, but it's taken on those values for sure. In all the respects you just described, people help each other, even though it's a competition, and even when they're exhausted, they do go back. And the stories are just incredible of the community and how they've come together and. Literally, just joking. Here's a great story for you that dives into that. I was in Chicago and we were putting on a workout. We also put on free workouts around the world. And I had about 600 people following me in unison down a Chicago street. And I would scream, "Spartans, what is your profession?" And they would scream back, "Aru, Aru, Aru." And windows were reverberating, dogs were barking. It was like, wow. I felt like, Mel Gibson and Braveheart. it was awesome. And I backed into, because I was looking at them, the 600 folks following me, I backed into a car and my butt hit this car. And the guy jumped out of his car. He was just pulling out of a parking spot. And he literally wanted to start a fight with me because I had tapped his car. Clearly, it didn't get scratched or anything. And I just thought to myself, man, you might be able to take me. 600 evangelists right behind me that will lift your car up here in a few minutes. And he eventually realized what was going on and took off. But the point is, it's such a tight community that I feel like it. Well, here's another example. We had a hurricane hit us in Vermont at our headquarters. And there was no way in or out. The only way in or out was by foot or helicopter, and it was a 30-mile trek. I can't tell you how many people showed up with axes and shovels and backpacks and hiked their way in to dig us out. So it's an amazing community.
That's something special. Very special. Yeah. Well, it's good because those 601, and you're the one, 601 people versus that guy, definitely not a great matchup for him, but also just sort of gives you the perspective of here's this positive movement. And then look, I don't know the guy personally, and neither do you, but somebody who's going to get upset about a little bump on the car, it sounds like they should be joining and becoming 602.
Well, it's funny. That's what the whole book that we wrote, Spartan Up, is about the idea of changing your frame of reference in life, because if you do that, you might not get upset if somebody bumps into your car or your coffee's a little cold or the kids scream, and the world will be, I mean, those sound like little insignificant things. Joe, do those things really matter if people are upset or not? They do. The world would be a better place, because if you think about it, that little frustration that occurred because somebody bumped into your car, maybe that translates all the way to your house, where then that guy gets in a fight with his wife, right? Maybe the kids are around and they see that, and it just has this massive domino effect. And it doesn't tend to happen when you've got the right frame of reference. When you've been in 30 below temperatures for 8 days and you just want water, food, and shelter, you don't care when somebody bumps into your car.
Yeah. No. Well said. Right? Well said. It's all about perspective. It's all about positive attitude. So I appreciate and agree 100% with what you're saying. And I'm hoping this book will do the same, as well as the continuation of the Spartan Race movement here. So, all right. I know I'm asking a lot of questions about this, but take us back to that first Spartan Race. What was it? How did you design it? Where did it come from? I know you had done Death Race before, and I could see why maybe people... I don't know if I'd want CEO of Death Race on my resume, to be honest with you, Joe, but once we change it to Spartan Race, it becomes a little bit more attractive. So walk us back to... take us back to that first race, and I'm very curious how you sort of evolved from that moment as well, and building out the course, and just how it all happened.
You know, I'm really good at iterations, and so you start with this idea of, hey, we're going to have this race, and we're going to crawl into barbed wire, we're going to jump over fire, we're going to put people through mud and water, and then somebody has an idea, hey, what if we had a spear throw, or hey, let's put in an 8-foot wall or a 10-foot wall, hey, let's put in a rope climb, and you collaborate with everybody that's building the course that first race. And one of the funniest stories for me was this idea of, hey, let's put in some gladiators. And the idea was that somewhere along the course, on some single track, runners would be run along, and out of nowhere, these big guys would jump out and just clock you, you know, just take you down. And so we found a few big guys that were working on our farm where this idea all started. And I actually got video of those first days. It was hilarious. I mean, you saw these competitors just run along, unsuspecting, and this, you know, 6'3", 280-pound muscle guy jumps out and attacks you. Definitely throws you for a loop. So the early days were a lot of fun like that. It was a lot of creativity and trial and error and baptism by fire. Literally, we timed everybody by hand. We didn't have timing systems, and so that had its share of challenges, because what we found, this was funny, was when you're timing by hand, you need the person to stop at the finish line so that you can see what their number is and make sure you get the correct time. Well, they were so pumped up and so full of adrenaline that they were literally knocking the timers over and pushing them out of the way and running 10, 15 feet past the finish line because they were just so supercharged. So we knew we had something. Like if that first early three and a half mile course did that to people to the point where they lost their own sense of control, we knew this was going to be exciting.
That is really neat. That's really neat. Well, two follow-ups on that short stories right there. Number one is, if you were to put out the job description and source for those Spartans today, you would have endless NCAA football players lining up at your door, I think, to fill those roles. That sounds like the perfect job description for that. And then number two is, I'm still waiting for them to introduce the Spartans into ice skating. Joe, do you think we'll ever get that in terms of the skating events, individual events?
I don't think so. But I'll tell you look at, you know, whether it's skating or curling or ping pong, or I don't even know what they call that sport in the Olympics where they're spinning around flags, those little silk things. Yeah. If they're in the Olympics, this will be in the Olympics.
So take us back to when it clicked. So you have this race, you're moving, you're learning, you know something, your budget is going out of whack because people are just breaking your timing devices. So, but when did it click that, okay, this is starting to move, and all right, this is getting bigger than myself, bigger than the people around me, and this is actually now we've put an organization in place.
Yeah, you know, even I think back as you're asking me the question, because I don't often think about that first race, but I think back to just looking around at the crowd and thinking, there's something here. We may have to tweak it. It may not be perfect, but there is something here. And then it went to the next level, right? We made more investments. We put on more events. And then it just became out of control. You know, then we went from one van to a tractor trailer to 5 tractor trailers. And then, you know, we had 3 people in the office, went to 10 people in the office, went to 30 people. We went one country to 17 countries. And it just became this this thing overnight with a lot of moving parts. And there aren't enough hours in the day, I'll tell you that.
So I'm going to switch topics for a second related to business. We have a lot of people on this show who listen to us from the business perspective, learning from the life lessons. And you brought up something very interesting. Joe, what about the organizational perspective? So here you are, just like you said earlier, you start this thing, and now you're getting caught up, and here you are on the show with me and the podcast. You're down at ABC today, and you start to get away from what I would call the entrepreneurial spirit and more towards the operations organization. So any tips as you've gone through that in the last couple of years for other companies that are growing as you manage your passion with what is a very small circle of then what I call an intersection of the operations? Very rarely do we find somebody who has both, and very rarely do we want both, because it's always nice to get others around us who can really master those things that we're maybe not the best at. So you said you went from 10 to 15 to 30 to 45, and all of a sudden, like you said, this is an organism that's getting bigger than yourself. I just came back from Zappos and seeing Tony Hsieh out in Vegas. And it was one of the things that bothered him when he first started before Zappos, that it was great. It was fun. But then all of a sudden, and I know they weren't running races, but all of a sudden it was just so big that it became unfun. So I'm just wondering, how do you maintain that balance while you're growing with all the administrative duties as well with you and your team?
Well, I again, not to belabor the point, but frame of reference is really important, right? If you wake up in the morning and you adjust your perspective, as you said, in my case, I do 300 burpees in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And so I like to say I like to meet my lion. And the reason I say that is in the old days, you'd go outside just to go to the bathroom in the morning, and you might get attacked by a lion. that was a normal morning routine. And it just made the rest of the day that much easier. So I like to do that. And then no matter how intense the administrative duties are or the stresses of having 30 or 50 or 70 people, it's still not as bad as what you went through in the morning. So I like to do that. The other thing is I like to look at life's goals in this way. It's a target. And if we were participating in an archery game, you and I, we want to hit that target. To hit the target, you have to make sure your arrows align with the target. And so the arrows in life are the way your beliefs, the way you live your life on a daily basis. So I make sure all my arrows are going towards, like, you have to put the time in, right? If you have meetings tomorrow that are important, you probably shouldn't be up late. You probably shouldn't be having an extra glass of wine. If you've got a choice between going for to do some fun things with friends or focusing on the business, I always put business before pleasure. So for me, the tricks I've used to be successful with these businesses is I'm relentless. No detail is too small. You can't, an example I use is if you're doing a 100-mile run and you're 10 miles into that run, right? And when you hit 100 miles, that would be like having a successful business. Mm-hmm. Mile zero when you start is you got the business idea. So you're 10 miles into this run, and you feel a little rub on your foot. Now, it's no big deal. You don't really want to stop. But that little rub could turn into a blister. So now you're at mile 50. You've got this blister. You're walking funny. At mile 60, your hip starts to hurt because you're walking funny. At mile 70, you drop out of the race. That little tiny detail at mile 10 to make that adjustment in your shoe that you didn't want to do knocked you out of the race, put you out of business. Mm. And so I really focus on the details because they, in my opinion, are make or break.
Yep. Yep.
Details. The insignificant ones. Seemingly insignificant ones.
I completely agree. Let's bring in Steve Jobs for 1 second. Read his book, and what did he learn from his father at a young age is to paint both the inside and outside part of the fence. And he even challenged his dad, I believe, if I'm telling the story correct, said, why am I doing the inside? No one can see that. He said, well, it's important, son, that we do everything the right way. And that then built an entire mindset for what we're all holding in our hands today. So I completely agree, and I love your imagery as well of the era.
Sorry about the noise in the background. I just made some people do burpees on the sidewalk here.
Oh, that's perfect. That is great. If, by the way, if you can get 600 of them to do burpees at the same time and get a videotape in here, we got something here, Jeff.
There you go.
Just don't bump into anybody, because in New York, they may not be as friendly as wherever you were the first
time. That's right.
But I love that imagery of the arrows, and it's just so neat to hear when you're saying every detail counts, to put something in our head. The other thing I really like, Joe, we hear about starting your morning off the great way and getting a workout in or doing whatever it takes to be healthy. And you said it best. If you're able to challenge yourself that early in the day to do something that's fulfilling for you, well, you know what? You are in the right mindset. And no matter what happens for the rest of the day, you can look back and say, I've already accomplished what I really needed to do today, which was just to stay healthy and be ready for all those around me to make them better and positive people. So I really like that. I like that
about,
a lot.
Think about this. This is a really simple statement that people forget. The mind, our minds, our brains, lives inside of our bodies. Mm-hmm. If our body is unhealthy, if our body's not running, you know, on all cylinders, your mind is not going to function as well as it could if your body was healthy. So somehow, you know, intellectuals, people that are busy with business, educators, people that are just not as fitness oriented but a little more cerebral, I think forget that. Like, it's the whole package. You can't just focus on your mind and not your body, and you can't just focus on your body and not your mind. And it sounds silly, but when you really think about it, maybe that'll help motivate people to, I'll go off track here for a second.
Please.
The swimming pool, I did a TEDx talk, and again, I cleaned a lot of swimming pools for a long time. Swimming pool is exactly like the human body. Right? Human body is mostly water. Swimming pool is all water. Human body has a pump and a filtration system. Swimming pool has a pump and a filtration system. If you don't run that pump and filter, the pool turns green. And I think we forget that. Like, a swimming pool couldn't take 3 or 4 cups of coffee, 2 donuts, a couple of French fries, 3 hamburgers. Like, the pool would turn green. But yet we expect this little 13-gallon swimming pool, our body, to be able to process all that stuff and stay healthy. So just something to think about.
Yeah, no, it's something to think about for sure. Really like that. So, all right, this is going to be a hard question for you, because I know you have such a positive mindset, and that is entirely backed by your core values and DNA here. But let's go to the topic of most challenging or risky choices. So I'm going to frame it like this. Joe, we're faced with difficult or risky choices every day. Some are minute, as we just spoke about earlier, and nothing to worry about. But some face us in right in the face and say, all right, what are you going to do about it? So do you mind sharing a story with us? And I know that there's the positive mindset there, but that you did encounter a choice that was risky at the time, and why you chose it, and how it turned out for you.
Every day I face one, but I would say that the riskiest choice for me was giving up the swimming pool business and going to Wall Street. I already had a very significant swimming pool business, very significant construction business, and got this phone call from a person I had met at college that was begging me to go, you know, investigate a job on Wall Street. And that was a big risk, because here was something that I had run for 10 or 12 years. I was ready to settle down. I had already met somebody, and I had a great living set up, and this was going to be like, I got to go into Manhattan and investigate a brand new career in an industry I don't know anything about, and really pulled me out of my comfort zone. Sounds maybe easy for most people, saying, well, gee, you were already making money. That's an easy transition. It really wasn't. I ended up quickly losing all the money I had earned over those 13 years building the business, because I didn't know anything about Wall Street.
Right.
You quickly get into that industry and you want to trade stocks yourself. And what became a really rocky part of my life there for a period of time. definitely questioned the decision. But just like Thomas Edison that kept making light bulbs until he got one that worked,
that's right.
I stuck with it. And so I muscled my way through and eventually got to sell the business on Wall Street that I ended up building over those years and moved to Vermont. And, the one thing I learned is adversity is the road to success. And if you don't step out of your comfort zone and face that adversity head on, here I was, a successful guy, this entrepreneur, had his own business, could write his own ticket, and now I'm working for somebody making 5% of what I was making on my own with a bunch of employees under me. I wasn't fighting a lion, per se, and some people say those are high-class problems, but it was definitely stepping out of my comfort zone.
What's really interesting, he said, we've had so many guests on the show and so many to come, and just to give a sneak preview to everyone, and it's not going to come to a surprise to you, but every single person literally on the show, and if you look at the first 22 shows so far to date, 50 shows, every single person has been through adversity, and there is something there. It is your ticket to success. It's all about how we handle it. It's all how we handle that situation, and it's one of my biggest life lessons of sports is just like life. It's going to throw you curveballs. What do you do about it? So I really do appreciate your perspective. I'm going to move on to communication. You could take this two different ways. You could either share a story about what I'm about to say here, or you can help us define what communication is to you and how it works best. But George Bernard Shaw, who was noted for many famous quotes, once said, "The single biggest problem in communication, Joe, is the illusion that it has taken place." Do you have a story from your career? You're either on the giving or receiving end of miscommunication, or like I mentioned, just some tidbits and some help here of how we can communicate better. Either one will suffice.
I read a great sentence a year or two ago. People communicate, it's like two realities colliding. and I read this other great little story that I want to share, which is fictitious, right? There's this husband and wife. They're walking in New York City, because I happen to be here right now, let's say, and the guy falls down and has a heart attack. And the wife is screaming and looking around for a doctor. She needs a doctor. That's all she is focused on, not to save her husband. And the first person that comes over starts to, unbutton his shirt, and trying to check on him and help. And the wife says, "Are you a doctor?" "No, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a really nice guy." "Well, I need a doctor." And the second guy comes in. He starts to help the guy, and he says, "Look, I never lie. I'm a really hard worker." He says, "Okay, that's great. I need a doctor." And the point to that story was, I think it was in New York Magazine or New York Times, was that when we communicate, and those two realities are colliding, that person, that woman in that example, needs something, and the person that arrived is giving sometimes, or most times, a completely different thing than the person receiving needs. And so that's why I think people miscommunicate. So you ask the question, do I have that all day, every day? I do 600 emails a day. I'm having miscommunications issue on a daily basis because the person I'm talking to has one thing going on, one set of needs. I have a completely different set. I have a frame of mindset at that moment in time. Maybe I'm aggravated, maybe something just happened. So I'm communicating a certain way. They're receiving it a completely different way. And I don't know, it's something I'm working on, because if you can communicate well, you win. And it's not easy to communicate well.
Now, Joe, we're going to move in here to team player. And the reason why I'm mentioning this, you played sports growing up, you understand what the team model is like. And I'm curious, and we mentioned it a little while ago about how there's this camaraderie that's built. So what's this built from? I mean, we're hearing the story, I'm getting the narrative here, but this sounds like a team sport. It really does, even though we're individuals out there running, going through fire under barbed wire. But I listen to Kevin speak, I'm speaking to you now, and I'm hearing team all the way.
Yeah, I think it's because it's so powerful for the individual, and it's such a great gift that people feel when they're done with this thing, that they want others to get through it. And don't forget, we all need inspiration. We all need motivation. And the people that are doing the race motivate me. I'm sure the people at Kevin C are motivating Kevin. And so I think you want to return that. I think it's such a great gift. You want to immediately return it to others. When you, I don't know if you heard of Amanda Sullivan.
I have. She's coming on the show, actually.
She's amazing.
Yep.
And so you hear that story and you think to yourself, or Michael Mills, somebody else you should. I got a great guy for you to interview, Jay Jackson. You got to send me an email and remind me.
Yep.
A great story about Jay. But these people are so amazing that that you want to give back. You want to give back because they're motivating you. Everybody around you at a Spartan race is motivating you, and so you want to give back. I find myself doing it all the time. I climb up one of the walls and I'm sitting there putting a hand out, helping people get it all over.
Well, now I want to get started. Let's say I've never run a race. And it sounds grueling, right? And a lot of people are intimidated by just taking that first step. Do us a favor, Joe. You don't need to convince us, but set the stage for why and how we can get involved in a Spartan race.
You know, I meet lots of my wife's friends who just or anybody that's just interested in this. And really, it's just because you don't want to be intimidating. You want to turn people off. You want them to actually achieve the goal. And it starts out really easy, like just walk a mile a day. You don't have to do 500 burpees. You don't need to do 300. Go do CrossFit. Just walk a mile a day. Just get your legs moving. We were meant to walk. Get that done for 2-3 weeks. Now do some yoga. Sign up for some Bikram yoga classes. You really just need to get moving. You'd be surprised how quickly the body adapts to some simple movement and all of a sudden gets in better shape. Take the stairs instead of an elevator. Carry the groceries the quarter mile to your house if you're lucky enough to live that close to a grocery store. So I'm a big believer in, if you're talking about the couch potato crowd, people that aren't doing anything, just get moving.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nope. Got to do it. Big challenge right there, Who Are You Nation. I am going to be seeking out my first Spartan race, which I can speak to you about afterwards in terms of which one I should take on. But there's plenty of opportunities. And like Joe said, you're not even promoting your own race here. You're just saying in general, get out there, bite-sized pieces. It's got to start somewhere. So those are very nice tips to get going. Folks, I even had somebody on the show once that said they were allowed to watch TV. It was the rule in the house. They're allowed to watch TV as long as during the commercials they do sit-ups and push-ups.
I love it. Yeah. We have a rule. Our kids are able to watch TV as long as it's in Mandarin.
I love it. Absolutely love it, Joe. So it sounds like I can actually stay at your house, wake up at 5:45 a.m., get some kung fu in, check out the morning news in Mandarin, continue my day, and potentially then go back and watch even maybe a game, basketball game, what have you. So... No, it's just waiting for the invite, my friend. You know I'm just playing with you. I think it's really cool, actually, what you're doing there. So keep it up. Well, all right, I'm going to head into a timeout and then overtime, our final two sections of the show here. Now, again, we're talking about something that does not fit your constitution, but maybe you could share a story of a situation that you've seen in your life. So timeouts in life are similar to ones that we call on the court or on the field, where either we're formulating a plan or the momentum, Joe, is just completely against us, and we need to call that time out and switch it and reverse the situation. Could you share a story where you had to take a personal time out, reverse the situation, and how all that ended up for you?
Yeah. So we just had our fourth child 15, 16 months ago.
Congrats.
Thanks. And I was at one of our races. The baby was 3 weeks old, and my wife calls me and she's crying hysterically, and the baby's sick and she's in the hospital. And it sounds, based on her emotions, my wife's emotions, it sounds worse than I can imagine. So I leave the race, I drive the 7 hours, I get to the hospital, and very hard emotionally to walk into a children's hospital. There's a lot going on there that's tough to see. And there's a priest in the room giving our baby last rites. And that's obviously very difficult to deal with. But I'm thinking to myself, regarding your question, taking a time out and kind of just getting your stuff together there mentally. I'm thinking, well, maybe this is the way it's supposed to work. We've got three really healthy children, and I don't even know how to deal with what's going on at this moment in time. And so I talked to the doctor, And the doctor said, look, we're going to have to do another spinal tap on the baby. And, you know, it's not looking good, which is why we sent the priest in. And I said, well, do what you have to do. And so I'm trying to keep it together for me and my wife. And the doctor comes back in and says, you know what, before I do the spinal tap, the guys that work on the weekends that do the lab reports or, look through the microscopes, they're not as good as the ones that do it on the weekdays. I'm going to have that pulled and take another look at that slide under the microscope myself. The doctor walked in and said he had reread the slide, and to his amazement, the earlier physicians that looked at the slide read it wrong, and the baby was okay, and we could take the baby home. And it was like a miracle happened. It's like...
What?
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So I don't know if it was divine intervention. I don't know what it was meant to be. Maybe, you know. Bottom line is, I could have lost it right at that moment. It was a very difficult situation to deal with. But you hold it together because life is going to, as you say, throw you curveballs, and they're going to be really difficult. But you got to keep moving forward. You got to, when going through hell, keep going.
So it ended up, I'm just curious, it ended up not being, or is it just a common cold? What was it?
Just a common cold.
Wow. Yep.
Just a common cold that crazy.
Maintaining that composure, looking around, being aware of your surroundings, and instead of just reacting, like you said, immediately to the emotions of everything, to be able to slow your body down. And I found that not only that story, but also others who are in those pressure-filled environments, if you watch them at work, they're able to do that. Police officers, firemen. Now listen, we're human beings, right? we don't practice that every day, so it's easy to get caught up. But that is such a really tremendous story of how to just slow down, take it all in, and almost challenge the status quo for a second there. Because, hey, they're doctors, you're not, but good for you. That's a very fascinating story, Joe.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, we're going to go into overtime here. I like to have some fun. Now, the first question in overtime is usually about a healthy habit, but I kind of know your healthy habit already, but how about a healthy food that you drink or you eat that you could share with us? Something, anything on a daily basis?
I love, it's going to be very boring, I'm sorry for the audience, but I love a Nutribullet. I've got this Nutribullet blender.
Yes.
And I peel a grapefruit. I love just blending up a grapefruit with this little green powder that we have. This green powder, I've got this farmer out in California that makes for us that I think we're going to stick a Spartan label on. Me and the whole family take a teaspoon every day. It's got ground up cactus in it, ground up barley grass, wheat grass, you name it. It's sea vegetables. And so that with the grapefruit blended up in the Nutribullet is my go-to drink every day.
Oh, cool. Well, I just ordered the Nutribullet a couple months ago, and it's been tremendous making everything in there. Very healthy. Kids even are loving it. The green stuff. All right, Joe, maybe it's like going public. You can't tell us. I mean, how do we get a hold of this green stuff? It sounds tremendous.
To fight me for it, I've got, it's hard to get, but I've got a bunch in the house. The kids have been on it now for, 2.5 years. I've been using them as the experiment, and they rarely get sick anymore, and they're able to do 2 hours of kung fu every day. So I think it's working.
Yeah, right. Call it the burpee stuff. That's amazing. Well, I'm gonna have to follow up with you because I need to try some of this green stuff. It sounds very organic as well, does it not?
Yeah, it is.
Good.
It is.
Good. All right. We don't want Major League Baseball coming after us in a couple of years for your sons, right?
That's right.
No, great stuff there. Thanks for sharing that. Okay. So how about you remember these days playing baseball, but now, as you know, when you go to a stadium, music is so important. Everybody has their own walk-up song as they go to the plate from the dugout. So, Joe, I just put you in a Major League Baseball uniform, and you are heading up to the plate to face that pitcher. You are going to play a song over the loudspeaker to both put yourself in the mindset as well as potentially the crowd as well. What is that song as you walk up to the plate?
I would say a little bit of a cop-out. Anything from you two, I would do it for me. I also love Stevie Nicks.
Okay.
And probably a bunch of the viewers, the listeners wouldn't know many of her songs, but Stand back would do it for me.
Stand back. Well, we established that generation, and I'm with you, by the way, when we said that you didn't grow up with video games, so don't worry about that.
That's right.
But Stand Back, great song. Stevie Nicks and U2, such powerful energy there. So great. How about a favorite sports movie?
I liked Moneyball. Not to, you know, I know he was on your show there. I really liked
it. Yeah, what about it?
I like 42. I recently watched. I like. Yeah, I loved it. Loved 42. I mean, that was powerful.
Very powerful.
Powerful movie.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm curious. What was it about Moneyball that you enjoyed?
I like the intelligence behind it. Right. So you'd look at baseball in a completely. I would look at baseball in a completely different way, rather than it just being this physical sport. And you know, Theo Epstein, I've gotten to know, and so you know, he got married on our farm in Vermont. So. I have a special affinity towards that story and looking at stats and so forth. Plus, I like Brad Pitt. I hope that doesn't make me a bad person.
No, Brad Pitt usually plays a good role there, so not a problem at all. Well, good movie for sure. All right, how about a book? Now, first of all, number one more time, the name of your book, and then also another book that you've read recently you could recommend for Who Are You Nation?
Spartan Up.
Spartan
is our
Up.
Book.
Great.
And Spartan Up, the book, you can check it out. And I would say, I actually said this yesterday, if there were, if we were like digging up old books 100 years from now, and Spartan Up was in a wooden box in the backyard somewhere that we used, you know, treasure map to find, what other books might be sitting with it? And I would say Atlas Shrugged would be in there. The Art of War would be in the box. The War of Art, somebody gave me the other day, which is a great book.
Yep.
So the Atlas Shrugged, Fountainhead, those are my big ones.
Good stuff. Love the War of Art, by the way. All right, so you're the host of this show. Who are you? Life Lessons of Sports. Who's the first person you invite on and why?
I would say I recently got a call from the shooter who took out Bin Laden. And I think his stage name, because they couldn't use his real name of the book, I think it was Mark Owen. Mm-hmm. His real name's Matt. And I was so proud to be talking to him on the phone that I would say I'd bring him on.
Wow, that's really neat. And he called you you don't have to get deep here, but to participate in the race or just motivated by what you're doing?
I'm just happy he called, because I think if he shows up at your door, it's not a good situation.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think he calls in advance of showing up. So he called because he's got a book called No Easy Day.
Yep.
And I think a bunch of us tend to stay in touch with each other. Like, told Tim Ferriss, I spoke to Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Body, and Work Week fame. He called me that same day, and I said, man, this is like a trifecta. I had Martha Stewart living at the house taking pictures to do some kind of photo shoot. The shooter that takes out Bin Laden calls, and then Tim Ferriss calls.
Jeez.
Who would have ever thought a pool guy would get those kind of meetings?
The pool guy. Love it. Absolutely love it. Good stuff. All right. Chap foundation or charity that you are either participating in, run, or like to acknowledge?
We are starting the 431 Project. And there's a website, 431project.com. We are going to focus on getting 16 to 21-year-olds moving. And so that's one. Second one is CAF Foundation, Challenge Athletes Foundation, big, close to our hearts. Big supporters of. And the third one is Support the Troops. Yep. Support the Troops packages up goods that Whole Foods or different companies send them into these neat packages and send them over to troops that are on the front line. And they even send toys. And I scratched my head when I went down to their facility and said, why would you send the troops toys? They said, because when they're on the front line, if they have toys and they could hand them off to young kids, those young kids will tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, don't go down that street.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. Very interesting. So how can we connect with you, Joe? You have so many means these days of social media, but what's the best way to follow, connect, and find you in this world?
Just shoot me an email, joe@spartan.com. my wife always gets nervous. I invite millions of people to come visit us. No one comes because they're afraid I'm going to wake them up at 5:45. But yeah, feel free to be in on me, joe@spartan.com.
joe@spartan.com. Very, Joe. Does that mean the end of the interview?
Yeah. One of the people doing burpees just collapsed.
I hope we have the right collision, by the way, of somebody who can help. That's a good communication right there. So, all right. So we can connect with you there. Sure. Thanks a lot. And we're going to do that. And then I'm sure on Twitter, do you have a Twitter feed that we can announce?
I do, but it's not me. It's the company. And yeah. I'm an idiot when it comes to that stuff. I have no idea what it is.
You're too busy.
I guess email me if you need it.
We'll figure
I'm
it
too
out.
Too busy. I check Facebook all the time, but I'm not a Twitter guy.
Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out for you. So, listen, I do have one last question for you here, Joe. But before I do, I just want to say it's been a real honor and privilege to speak with you today. Just amazing stuff. I love your journey. I love your narrative, how it all began to where it is today, and I can only imagine where it's heading. And Who Are You Nation, if you go check out the website and find Spartan Race, I actually, after interviewing Kevin, did so. I couldn't believe the drop down. I'm sure it surprises you every day, of how many locations and how many events there are going on around the world. And it really has become a world movement. So just, Joe, been such an honor to have you on here today, and I really want to thank you and for being on the show. I know you've been a part of many teams here, but you have now officially been inducted into Who Are You Nation as a member of our team, and I want to personally welcome you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Most definitely. Now, I did say I had one last question, and this is the part of the show our listeners know. I call it our exclusive part of the show, our exclusive interview behind the scenes, having a seat down inside the locker room. What would you say, Joe, if people were to ask a story about you, something that, hey, you're comfortable talking about, but if it's something you are not going to ask Joe, Joe's not going to tell. It's just one of those things that don't come up. But if you could invite us into your life a little bit more and share with us one last story, what would that be?
Well, while we're having lunch, I said, I don't want to sit around all the tourists that I was just in the vehicle with. I want to go sit with the people that live here and learn. And I'm talking to one of the locals, and they're talking about, they're holding a dog. And I said, that's a great dog. And they said, yeah, he lost his brother yesterday. And I said, how'd that happen? And they pointed to the area where the dog got eaten by, like, some, I don't know, the lion, I don't know what it was. And the area that they pointed to was where I was standing for 20 minutes making that phone call, that trade.
Who Are You Nation? Our guest is ready to go inside the locker room. Are you? Gain exclusive access to the story as well as those from all of our guests. Visit whoareyousports.com, where there is a page dedicated especially for all of our listeners at Who Are You Nation. Until next time, please remember, both in sports and in life, that it's not all about the scoreboard so much as it is about our dedication to becoming a better teammate, healthier person, and adopting an efforts over results mindset.